Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
Well, I thought when you shake hands, we look into each other's eyes and Antonio had a different opinion.
If there is a problem, the problem is between me and him.
From the Men in Blazers studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of Long Island, New York, Rog, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
We back, like the Chicago Bears in preseason, build back Boulder, Davo. Oh, so much football to discuss. Even more fighting and handshakes.
Description. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's like nothing to discuss. It's going to be a short podcast today, Rog.
Yeah, just a normal tactical breakdown that you come to us for. But we need...
boring draw.
We need to get to today in fighting handshakes. But the big picture note for us up top, the Premier League, so hot this weekend, David. So hot right now, right? England so unbelievably hot. Honestly, Sean Evans should have been hosting it.
Britain is suddenly very hot. I'm sure that contributed to the madness this weekend. And certainly to quite a lot of sunburn, I would imagine, all over Britain today.
We are dealing with not just Britain hot, Europe hot, games being played across the continent in 97 degrees, 98 degrees heat, which is a truly terrifying taste of our slightly apocalyptic footballing future. Should be noted, we are going to have to learn to live with this. This is not a once-off. You know, when we were kids, Dave, I don't know if you remember, was it 1976, that one famously scorching summer in England?
Yeah, the summer of drought. I remember it very well.
Yeah, I mean, like the whole country shut down for a month. We had no air conditioning. No one did. No one does in England. There really has been no need. I think electricity had only just been invented in England around that 1976 mark. And I just remember train tracks melting, water running out. We'd kind of essentially become mole men. We just sleep all day in sweltering conditions, became nocturnal people. That was a freak.
Can I just tell you the thing I most remember about that summer? The thing I most remember is my mother taking a marker, a black marker, and she drew a line around my big toe. I was only 10 years old then, so my feet weren't that big. And it was a marker so that when we got into the bath, this was something that BBC had put out on some kind of like, broadcast to educate us all how to conserve water. And we all had to take the same bath, and it was only allowed to go up to halfway up your youngest child's big toe was how high the bath water could go. I doubt that bath made me clean up.
It's with that kind of tactical thinking that we held off the Germans in the Second World War. That kind of tactical thinking and self-sacrifice. But that was a one-off. That stuck in all of our minds. This is no one-off. Whatever is going on environmentally, world football is going to have to adjust around the world to this heat. You know, we're all worried about the ridiculousness of the Qatar World Cup. It's going to become a norm. Even in Europe, the heat's breaking 100 for much of the summer. And I guess as we're about to discuss, the most unforeseen outcome of global warming so far is Thomas Tuchel and Antonio Conte fighting and becoming mortal enemies forever. But by the way, I do need to acknowledge this because my kids laughed all weekend. Every time Peter Drury referred to the hydration break as the drinks break. he made it sound as if like there was a little trolley, a bar trolley pushed on, and like whatever the players wanted, be it water, gin and tonic, Aperol Spritz. I'm pretty sure I saw Mitrovic smash a couple of White Claws during that Fulham game, Dave. I love the idea. That would make football just go exactly where we want it to go if the drinks break was a real drinks break, Dave.
I'm pretty sure Mitrovic is going in with something slightly harder, Rog. Maybe some kind of Long Island iced tea.
Him and Jordan Pickford. Cheers, lads.
Okay, yeah, a quick news bulletin first, Rog, from the front line of Men in Blazers. Some quick shout-outs for some of the content coming out of the trenches. The first, a new pod series we launched yesterday afternoon when the football wrapped up. Men in Blazers with Todd Snyder, conversations in creativity. You and one of our favourite fashion designers, Rog, go deep on personal style, collaboration and leadership.
These pods really transcend clothing, and what I hope you will take from them, dear GFOPs, are the life lessons about taking career risks and also partnering and collaborating with others.
The first one is out now on this very pod feed, and tomorrow it is episode 4 of Tyler Adams' Road to the Cup, powered by Volkswagen. What a time to be releasing this one, Rog. And Rog, some news regarding our new book, Gods of Soccer.
Yeah, GFOPs, first up, I want to thank you, incredible human beings, for your beautiful response to our new Men in Blazers four-colour book. Men in Blazers presents Gods of Soccer, the pantheon of the 100 greatest soccer players ever, according to us. And it's been absolutely incredible to witness. We cannot tell you how bloody grateful we are. You hear me talk about how pre-orders make a book. They really bloody do. So if we brought you any joy, please hit that. And we know how counterintuitive it is to actually order something that you're not going to get for weeks, but it means the world to us, helps this bloody book launch. And we want to use this launch to shed light on this nation's great indie bookstores, the cornerstones of communities across the United States. My God, that many of them have suffered during the pandemic. So please send us the name of your favorite indie bookstore via email. You've been sending since I wrote about this in the newsletter. We have had hundreds, and we aim to spotlight as many as we can going forward. Do remember the pre-order. Take your signed copy of Gods of Soccer. You can find out how to get it at meninblazers.com. We have two incredible indie partners, Elliott Bay. God, I love that place in the magical kingdom of Seattle. And New York City's historic store, The Strand. They have a limited edition poster, a print, a beautiful print from the book that comes with that copy. We'll also host a special night of celebration to which all of you who have supported the book and pre-ordered can attend. But God bless you all. Indie bookstores, support them, America.
Absolutely. Okay, Rog, let's kick this pod off with a toast.
What a raise. That was me having a big first sip of my third first bud of the day, which is raised to novelist Salman Rushdie. I'm sure you all know by now, was nonsensically attacked and stabbed in the light of day as he spoke on stage. He's now in a hospital bed facing an agonizing rehabilitation. There's been a lot said about Salman Rushdie over the past few days, and there's really nothing I can add to it that is particularly profound other than that it's always filled me with a peculiar sense of wonder and joy, just the absolute childish delight this most highbrow of writers has derived from the game of football that we all love. Salman Rushdie is a proper Spurs fan, a team and a love he wrote about in depth in The New Yorker in an article called The People's Game back in May 1999. These are in the pre-Rebecca Lowe days. Salman Rushdie was writing like 8-page essays about Tottenham Hotspur, and he described the fascination he had as a young kid arriving in England from India, watching Tottenham in the late 60s. He described it as soccer being working-class self-expression. Those are his words from the article. And I read them to you and raise a toast to his return to full health. He said the following, "This is what it means to be a fan. To wait enduring decades of disillusion and yet to have no choice in the matter of allegiance. Each weekend, I turn to the sports pages and my eye automatically seeks out the Spurs result. If the team has won, the weekend feels richer. If the team has lost, a black cloud settles. It's pathetic. It's an addiction. It's a monogamous till death do us part love." God, Salman Rushdie, no one could say it better. I raise this to you. Salman, courage.
Well, that certainly contextualizes this first game we're going to talk about, Rog, to the Premier League football. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 2, another all-time Premier League tussle between these two London rivals in the octagon that is Stamford Bridge. The home side started the scoring in the 19th minute when, from a corner, Senegalese new boy Kalidou Koulibaly lashed home a volley and then hit a knee slide that looked like a C-130 landing on the West London turf. But this Spurs team got that dog in them. Rog, 68th minute, they hit back via Pierre-Emile Højbjerg grass trimmer. Chelsea would take the lead again in the 77th minute when Reece James steered a composed finish past Hugo Lloris from Raheem Sterling. But in the dying embers, the patron saint of Seven Sisters, Harry Kane, who else, glanced a header home to seal a draw. And all of this incredible football action was really just the sideshow to the beef between Italian powder keg Antonio Conte and German agro enthusiast Thomas Tuchel that erupted in the post-game handshake that resulted in both managers receiving red cards. A top five Premier League moment, Rog. Amazing work from the Premier League writers.
London brawling to the faraway towns. First top six rumble of the season, and it did not disappoint, producing a game of snide, eye-poking, guilty delight. In rolled Tottenham. Very different proposition to the team who'd lost three times to Thomas Tuchel's mob last January. A massive London derby that felt ahead of kickoff, really like a moment of reckoning for both clubs. And I said before a ball was touched that the one ray of light for Chelsea fans was that Tottenham's record at Stamford Bridge has been so dismal. They've won just one of their last 37 games there in all competitions. I think we were 6 years on from that infamous Battle of the Bridge. We go again. How did you feel ahead of this one, David?
I think I said last week on Amp, Rog, that I thought this was going to be a draw, and I was right. I thought both teams were going to be sort of careful in the way they played, and neither team was careful. But I didn't anticipate the fireworks. I mean, Chelsea have played Tottenham a lot of times since 6 years ago, that, you know, game that gave Leicester the title. And they've been, yes, they've been somewhat not tepid affairs, but they certainly haven't boiled over anywhere near to the extent of this one.
Raz home debut, Cucurella home debut under his eye. And by his, I mean Todd Bowley. Todd in his sweaty blue shirt with Owen Wilson alongside him, looking very, very Burnley midfielder, it should be said.
Owen Wilson could have fit in that shirt, Roger. It was so baggy. That was the baggiest shirt I've seen since the 1980s.
Is he like an untucked ambassador or something? I'm not quite. Maybe this whole Chelsea ownership is just a massive play by Untucked for world domination. But oh, God bless you, Bowley, and your sweaty pits as the Chelsea fans welcomed him by a massive tifo that I actually imagine the club paid for. So in a way, it was Bowley welcoming himself, the tifo. Yeah. Playing off one step beyond the classic Madness album, proclaiming, "Welcome to the House of Fun, Todd and Co." And how little we knew at the time, David, just how much fun there was in store for us over these 90 minutes. The opening exchanges, a battle of midfield. Conte still not unleashing his new signings. Bissouma, therefore, not in that midfield. Stuck with the intelligent yet cumbersome Højbjerg. Mount dropping in, Cucurella and Reece James pushing up high, gave Chelsea the edge, suppressing, smothering space. Spurs really hemmed in the opening exchanges, David. They seemed unsure whether to sit deep and strike on the counter or go hand to hand. Chelsea, so ascendant early.
Well, the most attacking lineup that Thomas Tuchel has ever selected, playing Reece James at centre-back, Ruben Loftus-Cheek at right-back, you know, attacking players all at points, Rog. He was playing two defenders, just Koulibaly and Thiago Silva, and everybody else was just up the field. And certainly for the first, 35 minutes of that match, Chelsea were just ascendant.
And the game came to light. Lloris had just made a fine save from Kai Havertz, and direct from that corner, Cucurella found Koulibaly, defender to defender, double K. The purest connection, screamed Peter Drury, which was really magical because he wouldn't have seen the ball come through late through traffic too, David.
Yeah, I mean, almost impossible, for Chelsea fans to conceive of how we could replace, you know, Antonio Rudiger, you know, such a good player, such a great defender and a goal scorer here and there. Koulibaly doing a very good job early doors. The technique on that finish, superb. And just the whole move that got the corner, Mount, Kante, Havertz surrounding Sonny, giving him no space, forcing them back, Havertz with the sharp shot. I mean, Chelsea looked just really impressive at this point.
No confident strikers. I will get goals from defenders. Tuchel, coaching genius. And what was amazing, Cucurella and Double K would have had like half a dozen training sessions together. Just class, finding class. And watching Koulibaly charge off reminded me of that Springsteen lyric, when the change was made uptown and the big man joined the band. Tuchel hugging him on the sideline. You could see the relief rolling off his tracksuit top. Davo is magnificent. Bowley looking on, nodding from above like he'd made it happen. He knew Double K was a false three. And I realised in that moment, you knew owners just reinventing the game of football, propelling us towards the 22nd century. Go Dodgers! And we didn't know it at the time, but this metaphor would become real, because I wrote my game notes. That was a smack in Conte's mouth. How will Spurs respond? Prophecy, prophecy. But for now, Chelsea continued to deny possession, and they just, it just kept getting coughed out the Spurs back line and recycled by Chelsea. Out-hustled, out-muscled, out-thought. Kante, a smiting fist. Cucurella, like a next-level Chilwell. Mason Mount was everywhere, just leading his teammates in packs, breaking forward with team play. But at halftime, Robbie too made a point that I really loved. Chelsea had been so dominant, but with just one goal up. Second half, Conte had Kane come deeper, try and influence the game. The backline pushed up to try and close the gaps by moving up 10 yards. Kane had a chance on the break on 60 minutes and characteristically shagged it the wrong side of the post. Richarlison trotted on. New team, new haircut, new tats. Who dis? What do you think of him, David?
I think he looked good. He found some offside positions nicely, which is, he did quite a lot of Everton as well. But he looks the part in the shirt.
His touch was terrible, but his energy somehow just changed the energy of the entire game. Spurs started to sweep forward and Chelsea failed to clear. Jorginho, what was he doing? This was just like not the moment to do F2 techers in the box and then just decide to fall over.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was so frustrating. I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on the foul on Havertz up the field, but it was clearly a foul. But there was plenty of time for Chelsea to still, you know, get back, even though that was in the middle of a flowing attacking move and Chelsea would have had a chance on goal. But I don't know what Jorginho was doing. He was benched almost immediately afterwards. I think Tuchel has had it with these dumb mistakes. But yeah, there it goes. And a little deflection from Højbjerg's shot and it's 1-1.
As Tuchel would say, Richarlison could have been in an offside position. The frustration around Kai Havertz surrounding the goal. Who cares? Because Davo, then it all just kicked off. Conte ran right out of his technical area, just celebrated right in Tuchel's face, his arms clenched. It was hilarious. At Adam OTH said, both men just have enormous wine dad energy. Tuchel, I think, incensed about the foul. He looked like he was ready and willing to rumble. But I mean, Conte, we know this. He's killed people before and he would kill again, right? Tommy would have had his head torn off by that Italian Begbie.
I'm not so sure about that. I think that the whole hairpiece gets in the way of my analysis of this man. I don't think he can be that hard. If he was hard, he'd be a bald Rog. He did do something which you just don't do in football. And even Mourinho, who is greatly loathed, I'm not sure he's ever done this, which is literally walked into the opposing technical area and just celebrated right in Tuchel's face. And that seemed to be A little up there.
Dyer broke up the fight. And I do think it was one of those fights where Tuchel was probably sphincter relieved that it was all over, because Conte kind of ran off backwards to ferret through his stuff to find the beer glass he could smash over Tuchel's baseball hat. And I've heard from football people that Conte actually keeps a prison shiv up his anus for moments like these. But if the fight had been allowed to go, Dave, you are our fighting expert on Men in Blazers. You know, Tuchel has reach. Conte has previous. He knows how to bury bodies in the Pine Barrens. How would this fight have gone down?
Yeah, Tuchel, I think, has got about 5 inches and 5 years on Antonio Conte. He's 6'3". I think Conte's 5'10". I think he's still in his 40s. Thomas Tuchel, maybe 47, 48. Antonio Conte's sort of getting into his mid-50s. So I think there is this assumption that Conte is dead hard because he's Italian, he's aggressive. But in any fight, reach does make a difference. However, this is my overarching sense of it. fights are usually terrible. You only have to watch most boxing, even most UFC fights, to know fights on the whole, even with professional fighters, can be awful. This would have just been an awful fight. The almost fight is so much better than any real fight actually would have been between these two men.
Undoubtedly, because it still allows us to fantasize about the whole thing. And I did fantasize a lot last night. I did realize the only real chance that Thomas Tuchel would have had, and it is a moonshot, was it if he could have used that reach to just rip out and work the Conte hair plug systems. I do think for any man like Conte, that hair system is the ultimate vulnerability. At Warren Abels tweeted in, Conte in 30 seconds, and he never has to take the lit cig out of his mouth to do it. Chelsea, though, resilient, and once again responded impressively through their strafenders.
A brilliant move, goes down the left. Ball comes in, Sterling makes just, I think it was Kante who makes it on the left, puts it into Sterling, great ball, Sterling creates some space. Reece James, at this point, I believe, is playing centre-back, and he overlaps the presumptive number nine in Raheem Sterling and puts it past Lloris, 2-1 Chelsea.
But it was amazing from a Raz perspective, collapsing the defence, but his generosity, because man, dude would have loved a goal on his home debut. Just that impulse must have been unbelievable. You know what? I'm going to take this myself and hit it off the defender or blow it over the bar or skew it out for a throw. And no, he fed James in acres of space. Fine finish. And Q Tuchel going full-blown Tommy Tuchel. That reaction, charging straight down the touchline past Conte, laughing out loud on a yellow card already. I mean, part of me was like, oh my God, Tuchel did well just to keep his shirt on and avoid that second booking. And I'm like, God, the Germans must have one of those massive, massive compound nouns for he who laughs last, laughs longest. I mean, David, who says Germans don't have a wicked sense of humor?
See, you said earlier that his sphincter must have tightened in that moment. See, I'm not sure that Tuchel has a sphincter because I don't think it tightened at all. He ran straight past Conte. Conte was the one who kind of shirked from it, couldn't make eye contact, pretended that he didn't see him, looking into
he was still looking for the beer glass. He was still looking for the beer glass. And he was also like, how do I get my prison shiv out of my anus when the cameras are on me? So that's where his mind was.
Well, it wasn't in his left ear, but it was unless he's going to reach down his ear, that hair system must be really complex. So Tuchel runs right past him and celebrates the goal. And it was the theater. I watched that replay back, you know, for the next 5 minutes. I thought it was so magnificent.
It was magnificent. Part of it was because it was a weird run. Let's be honest. Thomas Tuchel's legs are so long and so skinny. He looks like he's been locked in a cage in a witch's house in some German fairy tale with Hansel and Gretel. And he was kind of old manning it down the line. It was a run that cried out to be cut to Chariots of Fire or probably Flight of the Valkyries. And at DJ Chad Summer 1 captured it best when he tweeted, how can you run with no quads or calves, just bones? It was a bone run, David.
Well, he is all skin and bones. I mean, what do you think he weighs, Thomas Tuchel? I can't think he's a pound over 170, maybe 165.
I would put him 95 pounds without the baseball cap.
Yeah, he is narrow and angular. Not the strongest run of all time, but certainly for a man who we've not seen an inkling of this level of passion from him in 2 years at Stamford Bridge. So something, I must be the heat. The heat, I think, has driven everyone crazy.
He is angular. He's like, those legs are as if carved by Bauhaus. But looking back, this was not a smart move. I was reminded when I watched it for the 1,012th time at about 2 a.m. this morning of the Nietzsche quote, anyone who fights with monsters, and Antonio Conte is a monster, that's what Nietzsche was saying, should take care that he does not in the process become a monster. And I think in this moment, we saw Double T become that because I swear as he begins his run, you can just see all of that stress, that stored up stress, that Abramovich sale and the chaos which put Tuchel in such an awful position for the second half of last season. The uncertainty of the takeover, the emergence of Boehly and a whole new culture, the divorce with his wife, which must have been so painful. Every Mark Pulisic tweet just roll off his shoulders in one enormous yes, or I guess yeah for him. But one big mistake, Davo. You know what they say about laughing last? You got to shut the game down.
And they certainly didn't shut the game down. And the substitution that really made the difference was Perisic.
Into the dying seconds, Perisic, a series of corners, Christian Romero, yank back, Mark Cucurella. Really, how would you describe it? A horse collar tackle executed via the hair ringlet.
We've seen a couple of these over the years, not very many times. I mean, this was pretty severe. And I felt bad for Cucurella, and I think he was outraged at the incident.
I mean, we saw it in the World Cup, Peter Crouch climbing over a defender by yanking his hair to deliver England group stage glory. But, you know, Anthony Taylor saw nothing, which could have just been bald hatred and regret. But how did VAR not see a thing, David? I do not understand this, because it was clear as day.
We're not even sure that VAR looked at it. And that's one thing that I think that many managers in the Premier League have been calling for a while, is that they want some explanation of what VAR looked at and what they didn't look at and why they came up with their decisions. Because you would want to know, I think.
God, at Carefree Tosser tweeted, waiting for Men in Blazers to weigh in on the latest hot topic in football. Should bald refs be able to make decisions on follicle-based calls? It's an amazing question, David.
I'm horribly torn on this issue.
I laughed when I read it for the first time, but then, God, there's a lot of emotion. You're right. Distorted thinking. A lot of pent-up crap there, Carefree Tosser. Maybe we just need this one's going to the haired referee on the sideline just for hair calls. But from the resulting corner, Perisic drifted in perfectly. I think Sir Alex Ferguson once said about Charlie Adam that he's worth a fortune just for his corners. That's what I thought of watching these set pieces in the dying moments.
Perfect screen. Tottenham ran it so well. No Chelsea defender could get near it. And Harry Kane, as he does again and again and again, Harry Kane stepped up at a huge moment. And he'd been sort of largely anonymous other than that miss earlier during the game. And he got the result for Tottenham.
God, charging off after rising up to clip it home. God bless Richarlison, who kind of ran off like he was claiming it. But it was Harry Kane, who'd barely had a chance to influence the game, stepping up once more in the biggest moment when his team needed him. Particularly galling for Chelsea fans. Reminder of what you do get when you play a potent number nine. Why are we talking about football and footballing questions when we've got far more important discussions to have, Davo? Because the post game handshakes just went off. Total UFC weigh-in vibes. How did you understand what happened?
I felt like the writers just wrote this for us, Rog, because this is our bailiwick. This is the center of our universe. This is the center of what we
it's
know.
What we
this
do.
Is the center of we have prepared for years through our analysis of multiple handshakes given and not given, just simply for this moment to analyze this. And yet we were given a handshake, Rog, that we have not seen before between two managers at the end of a game. We've seen almost every handshake and non-handshake, aggressive, passive-aggressive, passive. We've seen them all. I've not seen this handshake before. It was something very different. I've seen it maybe in a fight in Southeast London circa 1983, but I've not seen this since.
Yeah, I've seen it once. I saw it on a train ride between Budapest and East Berlin in 1982. Between an individual I think may or may not have been involved in espionage, but we'll save that for our other podcast today in Crafty Handshakes. I'm not even sure, this is what's groundbreaking about this, I'm not even sure of my analysis of this handshake. Normally in the handshake terrain, I'm like, this is what I do, this is where I live, this is where I be, and I give definitive reads. There's an element of doubt in my own analysis of this, which I've never felt before when it comes to handshakes. Tuchel, I think, came over to block Conte, trying to alpha him, demanding eye contact by just really oddly, like almost Popeye, eyes bulging out. I've just had a can of spinach, kind of bringing the eyes. And Conte reacted by doing the rational thing. Did Conte, let me ask this as a question, David, did Conte unleash the old Napoli hand constrictor squeeze?
When I first saw it, what I believe had happened is that Conte had held on with the squeeze and then pretended with that look down at his hand afterwards as though he hadn't
initiated
the squeeze.
Yes.
I totally thought that was my analysis at first.
Because it was a Conte flex. You see pure flex from Conte.
So I thought that he had initiated the whole thing. Afterwards, when Tuchel explained that it was an eye contact situation.
That's an ECS, contact situation.
An ECS, it was an eye contact situation. You know, that he went in and Conte did not make eye contact with him, which offended Tuchel's Germanic sense of decency. And that's why he held on. He said he held on and he initiated the hold on because he was so furious about it. Of course, Conte earlier had also not made eye contact when Tuchel ran down the field. He wanted eye contact at the moment. He didn't get it. Look, I have a partner who will get very upset with me if I don't make eye contact when we say cheers. I have a son who I'm trying to educate. He has to make eye contact when he shakes someone's hand and introduces himself. Eye contact is a big deal. Not sure it was enough to provoke this, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, congratulations to Spurs fans who have become experts in unearthing photographs of Tuchel shaking like Sean Dyche's hand while completely looking in the other direction. So, like,
that could be for another reason.
genuinely amazing. But whatever happened in that moment, Tuchel was suddenly furious to be out tactic in the handshake game. Der Handdrucker, that is my forte. And also furious, I'm sure, that the second goal should have been called off for the Cucurella hair pull. So he held on to the arm. Almost like I was a Weiner arm amid the kleine Bona. He was ferocious. And suddenly we go again. It was like Italian Taidomi and Bavarian Bob Probert. Yes, we are. We're doing this again. Round three, the bell. We answer the bell. Conte and Tuchel, just there was squeezing. There was flare-ups. There was just, suddenly far too many grown men who should have known better dived in to prevent the fight. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? I did love Richarlison, who was just directing the referee to make sure red cards were given to the opposing manager, which is just amazingly, Davo. But, oh my God, Conte left with the eyes of a man who was headed to the locker room to get out the gasoline and the zip lighter and just burn all of Stamford Bridge down.
In the post-match, the behaviour continued by both men not leaving it alone. I mean, I'm not sure when this is ever going to die down.
By the way, Premier League missed a trick by not having Conte and Tuchel brought straight out into the centre circle before the crowd had dissipated and pull out one of those Russian slap fight apparatuses where they have to hold on and they can just take turns slapping each other. Winner gets all the 3 points. I think manager slap fights is possibly the future of football, giving you that one for free, Premier League match directors. My mate John Green tweeted that maybe this was all a setup for a rom-com narrative between the two men. You know, got male style, hate melts away. All we're left with after the handshakes and the wrestling is two men fatigued. All they can do is embrace and just slither on the ground into a kiss, full on the mouth. Let all the anger just go from hate to love. But I don't think so. Because in the post-match cleanup by the managers, let's just say, two very divergent stories. Tuchel trying to be like, oh, it was nothing. It was just passion. Ho, ho, ho. Conte being like, oh, it was very much something. And it will remain a burning ember of hate in my heart. He later insta-storied out slightly menacing threat that these are his words. He said, if I had seen Tuchel run past me on his victory charge, good job I did not see you. Making you trip over would be well deserved. Davo, do you imagine him sitting there with a glass of Montepulciano in his hand late at night with his mates being like, should I send it? Should I send it? What do you think? Should I say, oh, too late. It's already sent.
Well, it was maybe menacing, maybe more idiotic because he was so clearly trying not to see him at that point because he didn't want to look in his face. So I think a trip probably wouldn't have gone down very well. Might have ended his career, actually. So on the sideline, we will see. I mean, I can't now wait for the next match between Tottenham and Chelsea. I hope they draw each other in the Carabao, in the FA Cup, in the Florida Cup, whatever it is.
They will.
I want to see as many Tottenham-Chelsea games as possible.
2-8. By the way, the dissonance in explanations post-game, J-Dubs texted me. He said, to a German, the fight was just the cost of doing business. To an Italian, a blood feud that can only be extinguished in some kind of high-wire duel. Winner keeps all, the mozzarella. But Spurs, from their POV, tenacity, they play badly, but got a glorious, defiant, crotch-grabbing point out of it and can now continue to read the instruction manual on all the new players they've signed and bed them in, Bissouma especially. Felt like a win for them, right?
It did. I mean, look, this analysis, the beginning of this analysis, I think will annoy Spurs fans. But certainly
the way I look at it, Chelsea played like a top four team. And I think Chelsea looked really, really good in this game. They didn't finish like a top four team, but they played like a top four team. Tottenham didn't really play like a top four team, but they managed to gut it out and they managed to get something. I think you're absolutely right. For Tottenham, they've got all these new players to bed in. They've got a system. They've got a manager who the whole team, the whole fan base is behind. And they will improve from here. Certainly this game, the draw feels like a win for Tottenham and it feels like a loss for Chelsea. But I think the performance, and afterwards you saw Tuchel in the press conference talk about the performance of his team. You know, after such a disappointing preseason, I think a shaky start against Everton, this was a pretty phenomenal performance.
Yeah, I think the fury will be possibly about seeding twice, more so though about both goals arguably having fouls that came right before them. The inability to hold on will haunt Tuchel at home. And to have a hated former manager giving him the Billy Big Balls, that will sting too. But at Merchant Alpina summed up the big headline. Not only that these two are very much contenders for the top four, that's what we saw in this game with these performances. But my God, we got ourselves an incredible fist fight for those Champions League places, a true Royal Rumble. And Tuchel, Conte, round two, February 25th. Circle that date, Gripple Grapple fans. I've heard a rumour that I need to confirm. Conte is going to come out in a wrestling mask, Lucha Libre style.
That would be amazing. But what's that going to do to the hair system?
You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48-ounce cold brew products, some for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. And be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Moving on to the PR experts at United, seeing into the future and knowing what would happen at Chelsea, they do the equivalent of a Friday night news dump, hoping one of the most dreadful results in their history will fly below the radar. Brentford 0, United 4, one of English football's proudest teams, is outclassed and outplayed from the off by the upstart Bees. Four goals in the first 35 minutes buried Erik ten Hag's mob, who were just shocking up and down and all over the pitch. Shades of Rome in the year 476, when German chieftain Audacia deposed Romulus Augustulus.
For Brentford, God, what was remarkable was that their first game against Leicester City felt like a sterner test than what they were going to come up against United, who two games in are listing a locker room, just morale a disaster, Ronaldo undermining, agitating, sniping, the fans enraged, foaming, protesting, lashing out, deep despondency. Their club really Manchester United only in name right now, unable to sign talent, snubbed across Europe. Really like how we used to talk about Arsenal 5 years ago, that their squad is made up of increasingly inferior components, a bit like a high-sense television. For them, Brentford were the worst possible opponent, a star-free collective. I felt for Ten Hag ahead of this one. He already seems like such a very different figure to the one we saw even 3 weeks ago when he exuded authority and control, more diffident, less sure, hence Ronaldo starting. We're already in a horse, my kingdom for a horse territory. And it's hard to watch, Dave-o, a pressing coach hired for a squad who don't, can't or won't want to press. And on this day, they took their field. What was that shirt, Dave-o? Just a vulgar fluorescent yellow kit. It was it was hard to understand why they would wear that.
Is it yellow? Is it green? It's like that Gatorade lemon lime flavour, Rog, that nobody can agree on what colour it is. I'm not sure that it's a colour known to man.
It's just like a urine bottle that you take to the doctors, turned into a jersey, and that is how they play. Total, total piss. We have to note Christian Eriksen getting the boo treatment. Every touch was odd. Booing Eriksen, honestly, up there for me with trash-talking Santa Claus, turning your back on the rainbow, ripping the head off a Care Bear, not even Philadelphia Eagles. I think not even Philadelphia Eagles would boo Christian Eriksen, but we didn't have time to process this. 10 minutes in, Josh De Silva rolled really a routine shot towards David De Gea. It was like a routine roll, an easy out at first base, Dave. What happened?
Yeah, shades of Rob Green at the 2010 World Cup against the US men's national team, Rog. Just a terrible mistake. It's almost like it wasn't far enough away from him. It wasn't close enough to him. It was right in that mid-range. But he could have literally just reached out a leg and kicked it away. He didn't even need to go down. But one of the worst howlers I've ever seen that man involved in.
David De Gea, a gentleman who has saved United through so many dark seasons, was left beating the turf in an impotent range. And it felt like United were suddenly imploding before our eyes. It would get worse for Manchester United within 8 minutes. Off a goal kick, Martinez and De Gea tried to play out the back. What are you doing? What are you doing? Brentford, if you look at it, were so poised, coiled to press them. Nervous, edgy De Gea dumped the ball in panic to Eriksen with his back to goal. And God, it's honestly hard to watch what happened next.
Eriksen, you know, tried to sort of shift it over to the, right wing and, you know, immediately intercepted and, you know, just a terrible, terrible second goal to concede ensues.
Jensen reveled the opportunity to pounce on his former teammate, just drive forward, slap it into the goal. And I was like, what are we watching? Just shambles, self-destructive shambles. And United conceded 4 within 37 minutes against Brentford. Finished the day bottom of the Premier League table for the first time since August 21st, 1992. You should have stayed at a big club, sang the Delirious Bees fans for the whole second half to Christian Eriksen. You're going down with the Fulham. They couldn't believe it. We should say before we get to the United part, it should not be lost in the narrative of this game just how good Brentford were. Just victory against a starting 11 that cost 8 times their own. They have everything United don't, which is a coherent tactical idea and an unrelenting intensity of what they want to do. Thomas Frank, such a great coach. Really, what the US could benefit from if they wanted more than just bounce passes. Their fans will remember this victory for the rest of their lives. At CBCTOM wanted to know if Frank Thomas is the big hurt. Is Thomas Frank the hurt big? I love questions like that, David.
Brentford, I think, did everything. You know, they were gifted 2 goals at the beginning of the game. And then when it just felt inevitable that United would come back at them, they managed to just completely pile on the pressure and take them on the counter and exploit every single mistake. And Man United just had nothing. They had nothing to show for all of that possession. All of those passes, they dominate. You look at the stat line, they dominate every stat, except for losing 4-0 is just a shocker.
How about on authority? Thomas Frank is the Higgy hurt, and this was the greatest result in the history of his club. First win over United since 1937. And RIP Manchester United, really, born 1878, died 2022. As you said in your introduction, it was really like watching the Ottoman Empire break up or Prussia just cease to exist. footballers playing as if they wanted to prove their jerseys are not the worst thing in the game. Ten Hag would later say, Brentford were more hungry. We conceded goals for mistakes. You can't, this is incredible, you can't have a tactical plan, but then put it in the bin. First of all, Dave, is Ten Hag's job in trouble? First United manager to lose his first two games since 1921. Is he just a dirt Urban Meyer?
Look, I think he is in trouble if this doesn't turn around quickly. If they continue to lose games, you can sort of, as we've said before, we never saw the table published when we were kids until they played three or four games. But if we're looking at four or five games in and United are still without a win, or even worse, without a couple of points, it will be, I think it's got to be curtains. Because you said earlier that, you know, they don't have the players, and you're right, they've been, you know, definitely sort of hurt in the transfer market, you know, the reputation of the club, the uncertainty around the Cristiano Ronaldo situation has definitely hurt them. But you then look at that lineup and you look at the resumes of the players who are starting for them, the resumes of the players who are on the bench, and it's just unbelievable to lose 4-0 to Brentford.
That's what is amazing about this Ten Hag moment. And I feel for him. He looks aware of how abysmal his team looked. Tacticless, flabby, truly lost. Honestly, he has the haunted look of Ned Stark in King's Landing. A good man, completely bewildered by his new surrounding and aware that everything he's built, his reputation, his confidence, his track record, his sense of self, was about to end up on the executioner's block before the end of season one. And you think of Frank de Boer's stint at Palace, but even more Dutch. De Boer lasted, what, like 77 days before he was rejected like a donor organ by its host body. And the incredible thing is we've seen great teams become awful, play terrible football, like the end of Mourinho's reigns at Chelsea were painful to witness. But this is the beginning of an era, the Ten Hag era. You know, if two matches actually constitute an era, this is not a descent. This is the very start when the players are meant to be showing us their best for their new guy. But this was fatigue. This was misery. This was confusion. It's all already there. An eye-popping seven straightaway losses by a cumulative score of 2 goals scored, 21 conceded. These are not the stats of a big six club. Big picture, which is where we have to go. I mean, I did tweet this. If you put the biggest bloody City fan in charge of Manchester United over the last decade, I don't believe they could have destroyed the club any more effectively than the Glazers have. Gary Neville said, it's a real achievement to spend $1.4 billion and be this bad. It is unfathomable to witness, right, Dave? I mean, it is a problem from the very top on downwards, a rotten, rotten organisation and culture.
Yeah, and what you're saying is this is the new manager bounce that we are witnessing right now. it's not that good. Yeah, and it makes you look back at the reigns of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and at Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal and David Moyes and think, yeah, they're pretty good managers. They did quite a nice job at Man United. It is just, what can he possibly do to turn it around? He can't turn around the entire club. He can't turn around everything. You know, the Cristiano Ronaldo situation, I think, you know, watching Ronaldo get so frustrated with his teammates and frustrated about the, you know, what was going on when he himself has at least some part of the blame of how we're in this situation with the distraction that he caused throughout the whole of preseason, the beginning of the season. I just don't know what they do. I can't imagine. I can't imagine being sitting in Ten Hag's seat and trying to come up with a plan of what to do next.
Ronaldo reminds me at this point of that super tanker that got jammed in the Suez Canal and just blocked everything up and just sat there unable to move forward, move backwards, do anything. Just its own size, its own weight, its own immensity just pretty well ate up the whole world. And when we talk about the Glazers, a lot of you are like, well, they don't, you know, they're not the players making the terrible decisions, the terrible plays. The honest truth is, this squad long ago bled out their confidence and morale. Money has been splurged, but here's the key part. In such a non-strategic way, they've created an exquisite corpse of a squad with no identity, no pairings or combinations, no rhyme or reason other than hype. You know, the players, according to Ragnick and now Ten Hag, do not, cannot, will not listen to tactical plans, cannot press. And the only players who they're linked to now are massive stars who are available, or players Ten Hag knows from Dutch football. They have no scouting, no plan, no vision. A once great stadium, Old Trafford, is now rotten, falling into disrepair. There's no plan, there's no scouting, there's no organisation. And the truth is this, that the muscle that made Manchester United so enormous in the early days of the Premier League was really a brand muscle. They were football's first global brand, and a global brand needs footballers that market that brand. They didn't bring in footballers who could play tactically cohesive football. So they're almost broken because of the very thing that allowed them to rise. And they are second rate in this new era of data and analytics and coherent tactics. The thing that's amazing about the Arnautovic deal, which was rumoured last week until it was called off because the fans rebelled, you'd think they scouted and data analysed him and believed he was what was needed, or didn't. But to call it off because of a fan outcry just suggests that they have no idea what they're doing at all. And last word to GFOP at Escoces Days. I'm pretty sure the Glazers are just using United the same way Paulie and Henry used the bamboo lounge in Goodfellas. Run up the debt, kill the franchise value, and then when there's not a nickel left to steal, you'll see Joel Glazer outside Old Trafford with the matches just walking away.
To happier news, Arsenal 4, Leicester 2. Gabriel Jesus delivers 2 goals and 2 assists on his home debut for the club. The first, a wonderful looping chip over Leicester keeper Danny Ward. He doubled up with a back post header off a corner just 10 minutes later. Leicester twice threatened to fight back, first forcing William Saliba into an own goal and second through a Maddison fizzer. But both times, Arsenal restored a 2-goal cushion within minutes thanks to Granit Xhaka pouncing on a loose ball and Gabriel Martinelli picking an excellent finish from distance, his second in as many games.
An imperious opening by Arsenal. All their wizardry coming down the left through Gabriel Jesus, Martinelli, Xhaka, Zinchenko, which is noted because so much of their attack came down the right through Saka and Odegaard last season. And now opponents are trying to repress them, but they leave so much space on the other side for the joy to come. And last season, it would have been almost unthinkable for Arsenal to score 4 times and Saka not to be involved in any of them. But God, that opening goal, Davo, Jesus's first in the Premier League for the club, was so sensational. Has anyone at Arsenal had that kind of impudent vision and the ability to execute it since Alexis Sanchez?
No, I mean, no one's had that kind of finishing ability. I'm not even sure Gabriel Jesus has had that kind of finishing ability at any point himself. But talk about the right player at the right time, at the right club, and everything working for everyone. I just love watching him play football in that red and white shirt. This is odd for me.
From a stationary position, ball just came to his feet and unleashed a lobbed finish of perfection, emphatic, born of a confident, swaggering mindset. He really is the Matt Turner of strikers. At the Micah Dahl wrote to us on Insta that the goal was such a stunning moment. It was like watching John Turturro in The Big Lebowski scream, "No one f*** with the Jesus!" And watching Zinchenko jump on his back in celebration. I realise Manchester City's B team are going to come second this season, Dave. It wouldn't be Arsenal, though, without an appetite for self-destruction. Leicester tried to get back into it, but they responded, Arsenal, to their own wobble so bloody quickly. Credit Xhaka popping in a good space, making a heart sign at the Emirates crowd. Martinelli, a goal. God, just beautiful. They also had fake Schmeichel, Danny Ward in goal for Leicester and his howler to thank for that. Leicester, though, looking like damaged goods, unrefreshed aging squad, real injuries, the threat to them and their vulnerabilities really flying under the radar as a story at the moment. But whisper this, Dave, as you've already said, suddenly, being an Arsenal fan feels like a run through a daisy field. They've got Bournemouth, Fulham, Villa, United, Everton, Brentford, such a kind run of games, running into that first North London derby at the top of October. Davo, Arsenal fans, could this be their year?
You know what? It does feel like a run through a daisy field right now. I still stand by my sense that we'll really know about this club and, you know, how strong they're going to be this season. The first time they have a bit of a setback, the first time they run into a landmine, things are going very well for them right now. The players are just playing beautiful football. And I love watching how tough in the tackle they are. I love watching how hard they press. But there's going to be adversity.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well, inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I'll tell you who doesn't love goals. Bournemouth, Rog. They went into Man City and lost 4-0. City cruised past the Cherries thanks to goals from midfield trio Gundogan, De Bruyne and Phil Foden. De Bruyne's a simply outrageous outside-of-the-boot slap shot. A Jefferson Lerma own goal sealed a comprehensive victory for City, who cruised despite a quiet game for Erling Haaland, who tallied only 8 touches and 2 passes across 74 minutes, but still somehow left with an assist.
I knew this game would be a blowout for the moment. Friday press conferences, I think Pep Guardiola said, Bournemouth's playing patterns are so clear and so clever under Scott Parker. And you knew right then that he was completely aware that this would be a stroll in the park. And I think Bournemouth half hoped that KDB and his translucent Flanders complexion would just melt like butter in the sun. But it didn't. And he was the beating heart of another dominant performance. City tore apart a rearguard action from Bournemouth with ferocious intensity. No Grealish, Mahrez in, 67% possession. Honestly, could have been 3 or 4 nil inside 6 minutes. Bournemouth held out for 19 long agonising minutes until Haaland, with sumptuous quality, drew 3 defenders on the edge of the box, fed Gundogan deliciously. Gundo's 50th goal for City, but a strike which showed the double-edged sword that Haaland is for teams. As you said, he had 8 touches in this game, but you either give him room to run in behind or else he can draw markers and create space for others to maraud in. Death by poison or death by large Norwegian man-child. Second goal though, Davo. God, KDB, a pawn of a finish. After watching him, I honestly feel forever changed, but like Aaron Rodgers after his Peruvian ayahuasca trip.
Yeah, this was an amazing, took the ball on the inside right. A couple of step overs, a couple of tricky little moves, but that was nothing compared to the just impudence of the outside of the boot finish. To the goalkeeper's right into the corner netting. Brilliant goal.
City so dominant, honestly hard to even evaluate their performance. They shut the game down at halftime. Bournemouth fans probably just elated the damage wasn't worse. Second half basically became a technical area, sartorial classico, Pep sloppy. With no doubt a very expensive Hanso and T-shirt. You know T-shirts, David. What does that look like to you?
Well, it looked like a Young Maven to me. I actually tried to look it up. I wouldn't mind one of those myself.
But Scott Parker stayed committed to his cardi and tie and spread collars combo. Cardi in the 90-plus degrees style hurts. GFOP and Jake Pechtel said, Pep established the star game and then abandoned it. Now, just pure comfort. And he reminds me, Pep, a friend of mine, who made billions in a media deal recently in LA. And he's been car obsessed like the rest of LA. You know that, Davo. You know, what you drive is how you're seen. And then he made this deal and made him billions. And when I went out for dinner with him, he just rolled in a Subaru Outback. And I realized he's suddenly so rich, he doesn't care anymore or can show he doesn't care anymore. And I thought that is Pep Guardiola and his style decisions now levels above. Newcastle away next week, Abu Dhabi versus Saudi Arabia, English football. Who said it sold its soul? Nonsense.
Yeah, next week, Pep will be wearing Todd Bowley's baggy blue shirt. We'll see if he goes to that.
And new pants. Okay, Rog. And new pants. That'd be amazing.
Oh, it's big enough. Big enough. You can wear it as a muumuu. Southampton 2, Leeds 2. Jesse Marsh's Leeds look to be in control of the game heading into the home stretch. A Rodrigo Moreno brace giving them a 2-0 lead on the hour mark. But the former RB Leipzig coach they told you not to worry about dug deep. Ralf Hasenhüttl sending on a raft of substitutes to change the Saints' fortunes. Joe Aribo opened his account in the Premier League off the bench in the 72nd minute. And in the 81st minute, Carl Walker-Peters was slipped in by a fabulous ball to rescue a draw.
God, how America tuned in deliriously expectant after that opening game of wonder in which we claim that goal for Brendan Aaronson like we once did Plymouth Rock. We were expectant. Southampton had won just once in their previous 13, outrolled our Leeds. America's team, tie-dyes, clearly designed to engage deadheads. Once in a while, you can get shown the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. And with the same started 11, they opened so brightly. We've got to raise a quick glass to Ralf Hasenhüttl, Davo. Last week, remember, waistcoat, no jacket, sockless, Kits Buell mixologist. This week, T-shirt, trucker hat. He looked like a long-distance driver on the Autobahn from Bregenz to Klagenfurt. I mean, that dude has more looks than Philip Jennings in The Americans.
He does. It may not be the same Ralf Hasenhüttl. Certainly worth considering.
God, that can be the only bloody logical solution. 30 seconds into the second half, whatever Jesse said in the locker room worked. Honorary American Jack Harrison down the left, crossed Rodrigo Shop at the near post, made a difficult finish look bloody easy. Soon be two, set piece. Rodrigo stealing the goal on the line. And the artist formerly known as Dan Wiener tweeted, "Major Leeds soccer," which I love, Davo, in every single regard. But then, 95 degrees sun, Leeds melted. And there's been questions ahead of this game. Could Leeds keep their run and gun hunting packs football up at these temperatures? Marsh had been called out about it midweek and he said, you know, when I played in MLS in New York, one of the questions was, can you play pressing football in the summer? And our record in games over 90 degrees was strong. And he may have been in MLS, but his players hadn't. And they just wilted. Hasenhüttl threw on fresh legs, changed formation. All three Saints substitutes combined. Aribo plucked from Rangers over the summer. Instant impact with a cool finish. And Leeds were out on their feet. 11 minutes later, Southampton unfurled a fine team goal. Leeds looked so dead-legged. Carl Walker-Peters finishing brilliantly. Just the energy, the balance, the entire feel of the game had tilted. And for the rest, Leeds just hung on. I think for Jesse Marsh, a lesson learned. He's got to trust his bench. But Davo, there was progress. No fight at the final whistle. Which is not nothing, right?
That's good. He didn't get into a fight with Ralf, or this version of Ralf Hasenhüttl, at least. You know, certainly I think for some, you know, new fans of Leeds, they'll be disappointed that this wasn't such a showcase for Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson. I thought they both played well. I thought they were solid, Rog, in this game. But that's what it's going to be like. Like, it's not a straight line. It won't just be America, America, America every single week.
Why, David? Why?
It's going to be a long season for Leeds United, Rog. And it's going to be, look, I think they are better than last year on present evidence, but it's still going to be a long, hard struggle in this Premier League.
Hasenhüttl redemption tour took a victory lap. A lot of tabloid rumours of him losing the dressing room. He said, sorry, we destroyed a few headlines that were already written. Saints now face two crisis klaxon teams back to back, Leicester away, United at home. And for Leeds, frustration to let a 2-0 goal lead slip. But big picture, 4 points out of six. Having lost your two best players at the club, you would have bitten your arm off for that before the season. Let's talk after next weekend's Chelsea game, Davo, which is going to be, oh my God, Tuchel against Jesse Marsh. Two undefeated fighters. Let them fight. Let them fight.
Yeah, the anti-American Tommy Tuchel, as I read all over Twitter this weekend. Anyway, it's going to be fascinating. Okay, another quick shout out, Rog, for your new Tyler Adams podcast. Tyler Adams, Road to the Cup, presented by Volkswagen. He talks about what his life is like so far in Leeds, how Jesse Marsh is as a player. And he throws down the gauntlet and challenges his teammate and close friend Brendan Aaronson to a fitness test to see once and for all who is the real heat map Jesus. It drops tomorrow from one American leaving their imprint on the Premier League to another. Dane Murphy's Nottingham Forest 1, West Ham 0, a scoreline that does not do justice to the madness that transpired in these 90 minutes. Two disallowed goals, post-hit countless times, and one penalty saved. In the end, the difference was a box-lop goal from record Forest signing Taiwo Awoni. Nottingham Forest win their first top-flight home game in 23 years and continue to invest in the side to secure safety, announcing their 15th summer signing over the weekend and looking like they're not done there. Rog, Forest are currently the Premier League's third biggest spenders.
Top-flight football returned to the magical City Ground for the first time since 1999. 23 years, 19 managers, countless owners, and a million dreams later. A reflection Steve Cooper really captured beautifully. He said, I talked to the players about how there were probably three generations of Forest supporters here and only one who remembered the really good old days. So the atmosphere was electric. And Steve Cooper, I mean, it's incredible watching such a collective performance out of a squad that's been built out of a need to buy. They had to buy. They had so many players on loan that they lost. But they've essentially just brought up pretty well every available player in Europe. And God bless Steve Cooper. At Timothy Zapp tweeted, Dave, pretty sure Steve Cooper was an innkeeper in early 19th century France.
It's entirely possible. This was, though, as I said earlier, a crazy, crazy 90-plus minutes of football.
It was. Awoni, God, a first Premier League goal for him. Forest first in 23 years. Some converted scrap. A dream come true for the Nigerian. Hell of a journey just to get. Incredible story. He grew up so poor, he had to teach himself to sew his football boots together. Signed for Liverpool, thought he'd made it, but that was just an agonising loan odyssey that began for years. Vindication on this day. Forest tenacious. West Ham, though, both wasteful and unlucky. What do? They had disallowed goals, red cards against Forest not given. West Ham smashed the bar repeatedly. Goals cleared off the line. The save penalty. Dean Hendo leaping to his right to parry from Declan Rice. I mean, how did West Ham not score?
I don't really know. I mean, this was, it felt like sort of, like several of the games over the past 2 weeks, very early season football. And I think we'll look back and shake our heads a little bit at this result later in the season.
The Forest owner, Evangelos Marinakis, dude is a unit. He's like some kind of Greek orson Welles. Kept doing the sign of the cross in the owner's box. And God is clearly proper Forest. Or she was, at least on this day. For West Ham, David Moyes crackled with seething anger post-game. Hammers off to the slowest of starts. Two losses, zero goals. They have a Europa Conference League playoff first leg game against Danish outfit Viborg on Thursday to help them iron out the kinks. Forest, though, my God, outplayed. Nico Williams doing the Lord's work at the back, but they hung on, propelled by those delirious fans. Honestly, big L for the match broadcasters who should have but did not focus on those fans singing. They are the story of this game for this season. All that longing, all that agony, three sweet points, savour every second, you tricky trees.
Yeah, very important 3 points potentially. Okay, Brighton 0. Newcastle 0. A goalless draw means both these sides stay unbeaten after their opening day victories. The Seagulls were the better side in this one and will feel hard done by not to get the win. Some great saves from Newcastle keeper Nick Pope on the same week. He was somehog left off the Ballon d'Or shortlist, Rog.
Yeah, he was left off the Ballon d'Or shortlist, but he's become one of the greatest internet memes of all time for surreal reasons. I think Burger King, when he was just about to arrive at Newcastle, had announced to their followers, what do you prefer, gherkins or a tomato? And a Newcastle fan account, this is kind of incredible, Toon Poles tweeted Nick Pope as an alternative and surreal condiment option. And within hours, Nick Pope was just every single big brand in England trending, tweeting it, making Nick Pope just those two words to massive instant follower engagement become the biggest thing in the world. And here, Nick Pope played like a condiment so powerful, not even Antonio Conte could banish him. Five saves, four from inside the box. Double stacker, steakhouse king.
Love it. Wolves 0, Fulham 0. After losing to Leeds last week, Wolves Portuguese heavy outfit forced to fight their second straight USA proxy war against full America. And they were lucky to escape with a point after Alexander Mitrovic, who scored twice against Liverpool last week, saw his 81st minute penalty saved by Jose Sarr. Clean sheet, Tim Ream and the Cottagers going to do this 1 point at a time, Roger.
Wolves created but couldn't convert. Fulham go as Mitro goes. And here he missed the penalty and was lucky not to be sent off for some gripple grapple at the death. The really only winner of this one was the scorching sun.
Okay, got to get to it, Rog. Villa 2, Everton 1, the first managerial meeting between a generation-defining pair of former England midfielders proved a rather low-quality affair to open the game week, Rog, with seemingly no player capable of providing the quality to break the deadlock. It was Danny Ings stepping up in the 31st minute, finishing sharply past Jordan Pickford from the edge of the box. It looked all but wrapped up after substitute Emi Buendia finished off a late Villa counter-attack. But essentially, from kickoff, Everton new boy Amadou Onana drove into the box and sent in a cross to be deflected in by Everton old boy Luca Dean. That was all the comeback your Blues could muster, and it ended 2-1.
Everton in crisis. A new series in 38 agonising parts. David, did you know this is the most played fixture in English top flight history?
Really? Villa-Everton? Interesting.
I had no idea. Everton have won it just four times in the last 35 years. I'm actually old enough to remember, believe it or not, when this was the Kazoo Twin Derby. And the talk going into this one was the managers. 8 years since Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard called time on their international careers. And just five after they were both forever MLS legends. Gerrard and Frank clash once more, their first time as manager, two men really desperately trying to prove that the other is the bottom of the coaching pile in the Phil Neville category. And the game started in the heat. Villa edged nervy opening exchanges. Everton robust at the back with Tarkowski's ears, wingspan repelling all comers alongside new boy Connor Cody at Motown Phil. Oh, you've got a world-class shouter at centre-back now, Rog. Be grateful. But for Everton, with no out-and-out striker, everything fizzled out when we were on the ball. No focal point. Every time we moved forward, the attacks just faded like bing-bong at the end of Inside Out. And on 31 minutes, the hammer dropped. Danny Ings, David, he's woeful. He's been lost, abject. And he and Watkins combined in the box actually looked like the ball had gotten away from him. Instead, he pivoted with wrath and vengeance, smashed it into the net. And I'm like, kill me now. Is there a greater footballing charity than Everton Football Club? We just cure whatever ails the opponent.
Yeah, it's great for Danny Ings, Everton Football Club. It was a fantastic finish, fantastic goal.
Oh, we are true miracle workers. We are selfless. And for a second week on the run, Everton behind, and they responded in a very, very dull blade fashion. Second half, I honestly found myself on my feet cheering, not for a goal, but for just a shot. I was like, just a shot, come on! Is that too much to ask? And God, you could see even the corpse of Solomon Rondon made an impact when he was flung on. A gent who's netted just once in 22 games now. With him as a fulcrum, Everton looked more like a vaguely formed football team. Villa thought they killed it off with effervescent, energising Buendia scoring off a turnover from our new boy, Onana. But Onana giveth and Onana taketh. He burnt down the left within seconds, slapped across back. And yes, as you said, Iwobi diving in there towards the goal line, but it was Lucas Digne, that turncoat bastard, who got the final touch. And Dylan Dietrich tweeted, classy of Digne not to celebrate his goal for his former club. It was, David, can you believe this? Lucas Digne, Aston Villa's Lucas Digne, is Everton's top scorer on the season.
Yeah, I can believe that. I absolutely can believe that. I was happy for you that you got one great thing out of this game, Rog, though. That was a nice moment for you. That was your highlight of the season so far.
Sheldon, it may be. And I'm aware, I realised how much I enjoyed that moment. Lucas Digne scoring, choking, his throat just closing a little bit as he did so. But what if being beaten 4-0 by Minnesota United was actually for Everton the season's high point, and the rest is all just downhill from that?
Yeah, it's possible. It is possible.
At the final whistle, Steven Gerrard hugged his staff, the relief just emitting from his little tie, pressure off him for another week. Aston Villa, not good. Everton are terrible. 0 points. We have not had one of our own players score all season. Anthony Gordon, now linked to Chelsea, David. Why have you got to pick our carcass clean, you bastard?
Yeah. I don't know how serious that is. I can't believe he'd leave the club he loves. But we'll see. I still have a feeling that Everton are going to be okay. I feel like Frank is going to work something out, or Frank is going to get fired and somebody else will come in to work something out.
No strikers, now no central defenders, no money, just good vibes. Nottingham Forest beating us at home next weekend before we lose to Fleetwood in the Carabao Cup. Onana, you are our only hope. David, I heard Elvis Costello on the radio this weekend. And he was asked to explain. Yeah, no, we're both like, he was asked, what does your song Allison mean? And he laughed and he said, Have you ever been deeply in love, but braced at the high point of love for the pain and heartache of breakup, even when the love is still at its apex? And I found myself shouting at the radio to Elvis Costello, who, it should be said, is a huge Liverpool fan. I said, Elvis, you've just described being an Everton fan when you're perpetually braced for pain, heartache, agony, even in the throes of blinding passion. Everton, I know this world is killing you.
How have you never got there before? That is the perfect song for Everton. My aim isn't true. My aim is better than yours. Okay, Rog, before we go, a quick reminder about everything we have happening at Men in Blazers World Headquarters this week. The Todd Snyder podcast, which you just dropped. The Tyler Adams podcast, which comes out tomorrow on Wednesday. You're back on AMP with broadcasting hero Andres Cantor. It goes down at 5 p.m. Eastern Time Wednesday. Download the AMP app and follow us to get involved. Rog, can we get a toast to close this podcast?
I want to raise a shot of Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion, in a shot glass to Ireland's Four Courts, which is Arlington, Virginia's legendary football bar. Really a legend throughout the whole Washington, D.C. area in footballing communities, which this weekend suffered a devastating blow when at least 14 people were injured. This is horrific. A vehicle crashed into the pub while it was open, causing a devastating fire. Witnesses said the crash was like, quote, a bomb being detonated. And first and foremost, at Men in Blazers, we wish all those injured just a speedy recovery. But Godspeed, that bar, I've been there. I've raised many a glass there. It's a hub for the game in the DMV area. So many official fan clubs host their games at the place with a pie and a pint or two or three or both. And as we've often said on this show, football bars have long been true vanguards for the growth of the game we love across the nation we love. Few places more than Ireland's Four Courts. These bars have struggled through the pandemic. Now this, and there's a GoFundMe for the people who work at the bar while it's being reconstructed. It's on their webpage. Please support it. And may football once again thrive at a venue which is more than a bar. It's a true footballing community. Courage. Oh,
absolutely, Rog. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at MC Davis, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at MC Davis, on Facebook with the Men in Blazers. Twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. We're on YouTube. You can see a video version of this very podcast, which I apologize has been beset by technical difficulties on my end. Please subscribe. We're also on Snapchat. Just search Men in Blazers. Visit our website at meninblazers.com. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balls win, balls win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balls lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Dave.
Love you, Rog.
Love the prospect of Thomas Tuchel against Jesse Marsh. Come on, America. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.